Tonight on the Gamecasters, we're doing a year in review. I'm going to look back at all the games I played in 2016, the good, the bad, the eh, and I do a top 10 list detailing all my favorites. Stay tuned. Hello, and welcome back to episode 11? Yeah, episode 11. I mean, there may have been a 8 or 9 month hiatus between episodes, but a lot has happened in the meantime. We lost a member. Just kidding. Jeremy, who is normally with me, is unable to make it tonight, so I'm going to do this solo. Yeah, so basically let's talk about first why the 8 month hiatus. A lot has gone on in my personal life, and it's just been tough to pull this together. We had a new baby born, my third, and, you know, just life stuff getting in the way. Didn't really have the time. So finally, we're going to kick it back. We're coming back. We're going to do 11 through 100. We're going to blister through these in a week or two. Just kidding. Hopefully it's not 8 or 9 months between the next episode. But that's neither here nor there. So, again, Jeremy's gone today, so I'm flying solo. And what I'm going to do, this is Ryan James again, by the way, if you don't remember in these 9 months. I am going to do the year in review. So, it's, you know, almost Christmas time, and a lot of games have been played this year. If I look at my list, I mean, I've played like 64, 65 new-to-me games this year. They're not all games that came out in 2016, but they're just new to me. And I want to talk about a lot of these. I want to talk about ones that, you know, I thought were great, ones I thought were good, ones that I thought were eh, ones that I thought were bad. I want to talk about my top 10. Pretty excited to get that going. And I also want to talk about games that I really wanted to play, but I didn't just get the chance. So, you know, I don't really have the resources that, you know, the Dice Tower or any kind of board game reviewer, you know, has, where they just kind of get free games shipped to them and they have, their job is to play games. That would be freaking amazing. That would be fantastic. Hopefully by episode 12, which will probably air in the next 2-3 years, hopefully by then I will have, I'll be rich, hit the lottery, and then I'll be doing this full-time as my job. But until then, I will go through all of the stuff that I was able to get played. So, like I said, 64 games is the number. That's a lot for me. I mean, you know, I didn't get as much gaming in this year as I normally do. Again, just because a lot of life happened this year, and there wasn't really as much time, you know, dedicated to it. It used to be I'd play dedicated Monday night game group. Then usually I'd play on the weekend, sometimes another day during the week. But it was always, you know, 2-3 days a week for probably a solid year or two where I was just getting so many games played. This year, that really calmed down. And I really only got to play, you know, or get to play once every week, other week. Sometimes, you know, only for a couple hours, so it's only like one or two games here and there. And then occasionally people will come over on the weekends, we'll play some more, but the opportunities to play are and have been a lot less this year, I should say. So with that, I will start us off. We're gonna go, I don't know, should I go the great, should I go the good, should I go the eh, should I go the bad? What do you think, Jeremy? Okay, so I will start us off with some great games. So, I think I talked about this on a previous podcast episode, the game Go. Now, this is, again, if you don't know, this game is kind of like chess, you know, a classic, abstract, strategy, massive depth game here in Go. And it's just a, you know, a crisscross line grid with some stones, black and white. maybe a yin yang thing, good versus evil, who knows what they're really trying to go for thematically. I don't think there's anything. But, you know, you're just playing stones, groups of stones, to try to secure territory and get the most points by securing territory from your opponent. And it is fantastic. I loved it. I mean, I only have a 9x9 grid, which is like the beginner grid. It goes up to, I think there's 9x9, 13x13, then 19x19, which is way beyond my scope. I'll never get there. I mean, when I first bought this, I really thought, you know, I was going to play this like crazy, like I do with every game. I'm sure, you know, everybody does that. Oh, this is the game. This is the one. So I kind of thought that with Go. You know, I bought it, I bought a book, started reading this book. You know, I was going to learn everything. I started watching this anime. I was invested, right? I mean, I was just going to hit that hard and just, you know, hit the Go circuit and, you know, just go crazy with Go. Well, that didn't happen. Jeremy and I played it once. I played it with Heather a couple times, and it just didn't really, you know, go down that way. But it was still a lot of fun, and I recognized that it was a fantastic game, and I'd love to play it more. I just need to, you know, devote some time and learn the intricacies and some basic strategies to just have fun with it. But I also need that opponent, Jeremy, to kind of learn it with me and play it with me. It's no fun, I think. It's one of those games where if you learn and, you know, too much, there's all these different levels. So if I'm, you know, knowing all these strategies and I'm playing against someone who knows nothing, it's not going to be as fun for either of us, really, because I'll just probably shellack him. You know, conversely, if I play someone who's a little bit, knows the game better than me, it's probably going to be hard for them to dumb it down, you know, and they don't want to do that, and I don't want them to do that. So it's kind of, it's going to be tough to get played, but it is one of the great games I played this year. So, again, not a new game for 2016. It might have came out in 2015, just kidding. But I love it. So another game that I played this year was a dexterity game, which, again, I think I talked about on the podcast, you know, in a couple episodes ago, and that game is Clask. So I heard about it on the Dice Tower podcast. Eric Summerer talked about how much he loved it, and I love dexterity games, and I thought, what the heck is this? You know, he made it sound like it was, you know, like this air hockey kind of little table game with magnets, and that sounded fantastic. So I ordered it from, I think I ordered it from the company that makes it. The guy was made them in Sweden or somewhere, Finland, somewhere over there. And, you know, a couple weeks later, got it sent to me, and it is pretty much every bit as great as Eric said it was. I've played this with adults. I've played this with my 4-year-old son. I've played this with, you know, older people. It's just, it's great. It's the same amount of fun every time. It's not something that you're going to get, you know, everlasting enjoyment out of. It's a quick, you know, little dex game. And it is like an air hockey type thing. It's great. And the really cool thing is you can get it at Target now. Target picked it up, which is great for that guy, the publisher, the guy that made the game. And it's really fun. It's a really good family game. It's only like 40 or 50 bucks, I think, you can get it at Target. And it's this big, you know, chunk of wood. It's got a, you know, just a playing surface with a ball, 3 magnets that are like obstacles, and then you have these little, you know, like pawns attached to a magnet on the bottom, and you're floating the magnet around, and I'm describing this terribly. It's really fun. Look it up. Clask. K-L-A-S-K. It's an amazing game. Next game on the list here is a game called The Others, and this is a cool mini or not game designed by Eric Lang, and this was a very popular Kickstarter. So the year before, Blood Rage was like, oh my gosh, you know, this came out, and Eric Lang, who was already an incredible designer, I feel like it shot him into the stratosphere, where, you know, he was just gold, the golden boy now, with Blood Rage, and that's just like, you know, the talk of the town. So after, on the heels of the success of Blood Rage, The Others hit Kickstarter, and again, it was Eric Lang, and Cool Mini or Not, and so everybody just, you know, pledge, gobbled it up immediately, and I was one of them. Like, I kind of got caught up in the hype. And it's a one versus all kind of game. So basically one player plays a sin, because the game is about the 7 deadly sins, basically. So say the bad guy, you know, who's the one, plays as Sloth, and Sloth has its own, you know, enemy who's like his miniature is Sloth, and then he's got all these, you know, acolytes or whatever they're called, which are just minions that he throws at you, and then you play these hero characters that are just trying to purge the world of, you know, this sin, and it's fantastic. You know, those players are working together. It's really simplistic in its design, which is kind of interesting for a game like this, because usually these thematic games have a ton of components, and there's just a ton going on, a lot of, you know, little rules that are just kind of, you have to constantly look at the rule book. This one wasn't really like that. It was very quick paced. It was very minimal in its approach. You know, you had, there's a couple tokens, but not really that much. And it takes place on this little map that's, you know, kind of predetermined. And it was just a lot of fun, and it moved real quickly. And I was really, really impressed. I learned it at this year's Grand Con. A guy, David, taught it to me, and Jeremy and I were just kind of, you know, smitten with the game. We were over, it surpassed our expectations, that's for sure. So that's a great game. Next game on the list I have here is Clank. So Clank, wow, what a cool game. This is a deck builder. Deck builders have kind of gone away this year. I mean, you know, there was Dominion that came out in, I think, 2009, and that was the boom. You know, that was really the first deck builder, and then that kind of has become a mainstay mechanic over the last bunch of years. And a ton of games have utilized deck building. You know, it was kind of like the darling mechanic of the last few years. Well, that's kind of died down lately. So when this game came out and it was, you know, touted as a deck builder with a little bit more, it kind of piqued my interest, because I have been kind of over deck builders. You know, I feel like I've played a ton of them, and I just kind of got over it, you know? So this game came out, and that kind of perked me right up, and it has a really cool mechanic called, guess what it's called? Clank. Basically, the theme of the game is you are adventurers delving into this dungeon to try to get treasure, and you gotta run in there and run out, because while you are diving in the dungeon to get this treasure, there's a sleeping dragon down there. And the more noise you make, or clank, that wakes the dragon up. And when the dragon wakes up, then he attacks you, and you can take damage, because, you know, you can be eliminated from this game, which is kind of a detractor for a lot of stuff, you know, player elimination. But in this one, it works really well, because the way it kind of draws out, you know, it's not like you're just, you know, dungeon quest where you're just dead in one turn. This one's really cool. So basically, the clank mechanic works wherever you make noise. You know, some certain cards that you play have clank. You know, they're really good cards, but they make noise. So when that happens, cubes get added of your color. I can't remember if it's to the board or right to the bag. But when enough of them, you know, they trigger this event, they go in the bag, and then you pull out these cubes. And a dragon, that's the dragon, like, attacking you. And it's just really, really interesting and cool how it works. And it melds that with, you know, the deck building aspect, which is also integrated really well. And it's just a very, very, very fun and clever take on the deck building mechanic. Plus, the board that it comes with is gorgeous. I mean, I think that might be a little understated. I don't hear a lot of people talk about that, but the board is really, really, really nice. And I really like that game, Clank. The next game is called Orléans. It's spelled Orleans, but it's Orléans, I think is how it's pronounced. It's a bag builder. So it's kind of on the heels of this deck building I'm talking about. It's a bag building game. So instead of using cards, you basically put tokens into a bag, and then you draw a certain amount of those tokens out of the bag. And then those tokens are how you take your actions, and the actions let you do stuff. You know, it's kind of worker placement in that way. Get things out of the board, you know, getting new tokens, getting points, doing all this kind of stuff. And it's really clever. I think it's really good. There's something about it that just irks me a little bit. I still think it's great. I still think it's a really great game. But one little thing that kind of irks me is that the way you score points, it's just all, like, basically you get these resources. So you get, like, cloth or, you know, cheese or bread. And they're just points. You know, they're cloth, cheese, and bread. But they're really just points. They're really just worth points. There's no other way to use them. You get them, And then cloth, I think, is worth the most. That's 5 points, you know, and another one's worth 4. The bread's worth 4, and the cheese is worth 2, and the wine is worth 1, you know, something like that. And it's just not really, I wish they would have utilized it differently, you know, like, I really wish there had been tiles or special tiles that said, you know, if you have so many bread, then instead of worth 2 points per tile, they're worth 5 points per tile, you know, and it would just use them cool, in a cool way. And that was the one thing I kind of didn't like about it. It just seemed like the points were just very bleh. But the mechanic, the bag building mechanic, is incredible. I have just recently gotten the expansion, which is called Invasion, and I'm to understand that the cooperative variant or scenario in that is incredible. So I can't wait to play that. That's Orléans, another great one. The next one is a game that's been out for a long time, and I just finally got to play it this year. It's a little card game that Jeremy had on his, I think, filler games. His top 5 filler game list. It was number 3 or something on his list. It's Coloretto. This game is really, really cool. I knew it was going to be. You know, I've been looking at it for a long time. I never pulled the trigger, but when I finally got it, we played it. I really like it, and I like it more every time I play it. I played it about 4 or 5 times now, and every time I play it, it just gets better and better. It's really cool. Basically, just a set collection. Kind of got some push-your-luck elements, and you're trying to get basically 3 different colors. So there's 6 different colors. You're trying to only get 3. So I only want red, green, and blue. That's all I want. Just red, green, and blue. And I want as many cards in those colors as I can get, because I get more points that way. Any additional colors I have to take, I start losing points. And it's just really cool the way it works like that. Because you're always going to pretty much be taking other colors, and sometimes you get screwed that way, and there's that push-your-luck element. There's, you know, it's kind of a little bit of take that, but it's really, really fun. That's Coloretto. The next one. Ooh, the next great. This one. Oh, my gosh. This one was pretty close to the top 10 of the year, and I think it would have been in the top 10 of the year had I played it more. But you may have heard of a game, a video game called League of Legends. It's, you know, like the most popular or most money-making video game or of all time or something like that. Well, these people at the game company, it's called Riot Games, a lot of those people that work for that company are board game players. And, you know, they would have board game nights at their company, you know, playing League of Legends. And, you know, there's a lot of crossover. Video games, board games, video gamers become board gamers. That's what happened to me. You know, I was a video gamer, became a board gamer. So I think a lot of these people at this company are kind of like that. You know, there's crossover there. So this Riot Games is like, I don't know, like a $1 billion company. And they decided, as a labor of love, we are going to make a board game for the board game industry. Because we love this board game industry so much, we're going to make this game. And first thing everybody thought when they heard about it was a video game company making a board game. That's not going to work. That's going to suck. It's going to be terrible. You know, the Mega Man board game's awful. Blah, I don't want to deal with this. Well, this came out and holy crabapple. This is outstanding. The components, for one, it looks like, I don't even know how to explain it. It just looks like it belongs in a freaking museum. It's like so nice. They're so great, the components. It looks like a super, you know, souped up version of like the original, of the regular version. Like this is like, you know, like a special edition, but it's not. It's the actual game. And there's like, I don't know, there's like 75 little minions, maybe more or something. And then there's, you know, your players, which are, they come pre-painted, the players that you have, the mechs that you got with your little guys on them. And it's kind of, the game is kind of like a programmable action game, like Robo Rally, but you're working together. It's cooperative. It's really, 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 really cool and beautiful and best components I've seen, especially at this price point. It's only like $85. That sounds like a lot of money, of course. But if you see this game, it's, I would expect it to be more than double that amount, and it's not, and it's just fantastic. And I played it one time, and I loved it. I can't wait to play it more. I will be saying that about pretty much all these games. That's Mechs versus Minions. Another game that was really close to making my top 10 list is a game called The Game. Are you ready to play The Game? It's a, I think it was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres last year. And the art and the theme are, blech, they suck. It's gross, it's nasty, I hate every second of it. However, the game itself is freaking cool, I think. It's cooperative. Basically, you have four rows. It's just cards. You have four rows. The top two rows, you're trying to go from 0 to 100. And the bottom two rows, you're trying to go from 100 to 0. And basically, you're working together with all the other players to try to run the entire deck out. If you run the deck out, you win. And so what you can do is you can play, I think you have to play two cards on your turn. And if you play on the top two rows, you have to go ascending. So if I play a 12, I can't then play a 10, right? And if you go on the bottom two rows, you have to start high and go low. And again, you can't go backward. But it throws a cool wrench into the rules where if you have exactly 10 higher or lower, you can play that. And then it just kind of starts you over. So basically, if you're going from low to high, you play 1, you play 2, you play 7, you play 30, and then someone plays 60. And you're like, crap, we only have 40 left to get to the end. Well, the person that played 60, someone else, or that person, can play a 50, because it's exactly 10 lower. And so you can break that rule of going backward. And it's really cool like that. And the bottom two rows go the exact same way. If you're going top to bottom, you know, you play the 100, you play the you know, 85, and then 70, and then someone plays 20. Ugh. You can play 30 and go exactly 10 higher, you know, and break that rule. And so then you can kind of stave off elimination. It's just really, really fun how it works out. You're the stuff you're allowed to say to the other players is limited, and it makes it really kind of tense. It's kind of what I wish Hanabi would have been like in terms of player interaction. You know, it's harder to cheat. Not harder, but I don't know. I feel like it was pretty, the line in Hanabi of what you can say, what you can't say, was kind of hard to tell. This one, I feel like it's pretty easy to tell, okay, I shouldn't say this, or I shouldn't do this, or I shouldn't act this way. Basically, you just, you know, tell the other players, hey, please don't play to this deck. You know, I have a card I need to play here. And it's just really fun. So that's called The Game. It's a little card game. You can get it online for pretty cheap. So that was a little card game. The next game is a huge, sweeping, deep, thematic, thinky, you know, expensive, humongous game, which I really love, called The Gallerist. Now, this is a Vital Lacerda game, and if you know his games, they are thinky. They are deep, they are dense, and they are just really, really, really intricate, you know? They're also really thematic. So he did Vinos, the wine-making game. He did Kanban, the game about making cars. He did CO2, the game about, you know, the environment. And then he did The Gallerist, which is all about owning and running an art gallery. And the components in this one, holy cow, were they freaking amazing. The game itself, incredible. I loved it. I freaking loved it. It's gone out of my collection now, which sounds kind of like I didn't love it, but I did. I just knew that I wasn't going to get the playtime that it deserved. It's a beast of a game. A beast. It's one of those games where, and these ones don't stick around in my collection too long. The games where you play them, you learn them, you love it, it goes back in your collection. You know, you have so many games, so it doesn't come out for months and months and months. Then when it comes back out, you have to relearn it like you're just learning it for the first time, and it takes forever, and you got to reteach everybody, and it's just kind of a pain. So for that reason, it's out. But the game itself, I love. Another thing with Vital Lacerda games is they're so deep and intricate and thinking. And I have his new game, Lisboa, coming on Kickstarter, because I really need to play this thing. Anyway, but another theme in his games are the actions that you take. Like, you can only do, like, one thing on your turn. You can either, you know, place your worker or move him or do this. But when you, the decision you make is so difficult and it's so dense because that one action that you take unlocks, you know, 10 other little things that you have to deal with. And it's just really, ugh, very cool game, The Gallerist. My last game in the great category is one that I literally just got a few days ago, maybe a week ago now. It's a really, really tiny little game, both literally tiny and in duration of time, and it's called A Fake Artist Goes to New York. This one, again, almost made my top 10. It's very close to the top 10 of the year. And I've only played it like a handful of times. Like, you know, it's just so, it's so good. It's one of those games, you know, you just, why didn't I think of that game? So it's an Oink game. That's the publisher, I believe. And this is, Oink makes games. It's a Japanese company, basically. And these games are imported in from Japan. And so what it is it's, I don't know if you'd call it a party game. Basically, everybody takes a different colored marker, and one player comes up with a word. We'll say the word is lion. And on, so I'll say there's five other players beside me playing. I would write lion. I have a dry erase, like a bunch of these little dry erase boards, and I write lion on four of them. And on one of them, I draw an X. That's the fake artist. I then shuffle all those tiles together and pass them out randomly to those five people. And they're all face down. So then I tell them to look at them, and they all look at them. You know, four of these people see lion, and one person sees the X. So that person's the fake artist. It's kind of like a Spyfall, if you've played Spyfall. So then there's a piece of paper in the middle of the table. And again, everyone has a different colored marker. And so you go around the table twice. Everybody gets two turns. And what they do is on your turn, you just take your marker and you make a mark on the paper. So if it's lion, the first player might, you know, draw a circle for the lion's head. And that's in a green marker. The second player, you know, might draw some crisscross lines for the mane. And the way we kind of play is a mark is determined by you draw your mark, you put your marker down. Once your marker comes off the paper, you're done. So it's not like you're, you know, you can't just sit there and draw a whole thing. So the thing is, the fake artist has no idea that you're drawing a lion. So he's trying, or she's trying, to ascertain from what's already on the paper, you know, how to contribute to the drawing without drawing attention to themselves, right? Because they don't want to be outed as the fake artist. Because if they do, if they're the fake artist, and at the end of the round, you know, you'll take a vote, 1, 2, 3 point. Whoever has the majority of points to them as the fake artist reveals themselves, oh, I'm the fake artist. And if they cannot tell what the drawing was supposed to be, they lose and everyone else gets a point. If they can tell what the drawing is, they and the person who's out of the round, me, gets a point. You don't really play with the points. It's one of those kind of games. You just kind of go and, you know, play for fun. And it's hilarious, the drawings that come out and, you know, what people come up with and how crappy people are at drawing, you know, like Telestrations. It's like kind of one of those types of games. It's like, that's the feeling that you kind of get from it, like a Telestrations-y feel. And it's a really cool game. Again, it's called A Fake Artist Goes to New York. So that's it for the great games. The rest are good and eh, and then there's some bad. So I'm just going to touch on a few of these. I'm not going to go into the detail I went to with the greats. You won't get that level of detail again until we get back into the games, the top 10 games. To hit some others, some good ones I played this year, One Night Revolution, that was really good. The Magic Labyrinth, that's a game I play with my son and my daughter, I guess. It's a kid's game, but it's really cool. It's got these magnets, like a memory game with magnets. It's really fun. Scythe, I thought was good. I really didn't love it. You know, but it was really good. It was really good. I felt like it drew a lot of inspiration from Terra Mystica, which is one of my absolute favorite games of all time. And at the end of the day, after we played Scythe, it's beautiful and it's a great game. I was just like, you know, I think I would, if I had to play a game like this, I'd rather play Terra Mystica. So out the door it went. Still a really good game. What else? Roll for it. I mean, what a simple game that is. That is, I mean, you just put some cards out, they have some numbers on it, you roll your dice. The cards will have dice on them. Like, so say a card comes out, it's worth 5 points, and it has a 5, a 5, and a 2. Those are the dice you need to roll to claim that card. So I roll my dice, I get a 5, a 5, and a 6, and a 1, and a 3. I put 2 fives in front of that card. All I need is a 2. So then my turn's over. But now your turn goes. And if you roll a 5, 5, and a 2, you can claim that card from me. And, oh, I just wasted my dice for no reason, you know? So it's a game like that, and you play up to, like, 40 points. It's really simple, really stupid, but it's actually really fun. So that's a cool game. Then there is Trajan. I finally played Trajan this year. Earlier in the year, mind you, but I like Steffenfeld a lot. And Castles of Burgundy is one of my favorite games. Bruges is a really good game. I really liked the Speicherstadt. I played Roma. Those were good. I liked all those games. So I really wanted to play Trajan because that's, you know, considered one of his, like, swan song games. You know, that and Castles of Burgundy, I think. So I played Trajan. I really, really enjoyed it. It was really fun. Has that really cool Mancala mechanic in it. It's very thinky. There's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, but it was really, really cool. That's Trajan. Also got to play Captain Sonar. So that's kind of like a new age battleship. I thought I was going to like it more than I did, but it was really, really good. But I really thought I was going to like it a little bit more. It's, you want to play it with 8 players. So we got to. In the play we played, we got to play with 8 players. So what you do is basically you have this giant partition in the middle of the 8 people. You have 2 teams. And team games are super cool. So you have 4 players on each side. One player is the captain. He's basically calling out directions like go north, go south, go east, go north, go west, you know, and you're just trying to maneuver yourself around this grid to try to find the other team's submarine. But they're doing the same thing to you, and it's all happening in real time, and it's that part's really cool. So there's 4 different jobs. There's the captain, there's the engineer, there's the, you know, the radar specialist guy who's listening to the other team's captain and trying to feverishly figure out where they are by matching this cool, you know, dry erase board up on this grid. And it's just very, very chaotic, and it can be very, very fun, but you really need the right people. And I think we had the right people our night. It just, I don't know, there was something missing for me. I'm not exactly sure what it was. It might have been a little too chaotic. I don't know. I did really have fun with it, and I'm going to keep it around. I do want to play it again. I think it'd be a really good convention type game when you have 8 people. So that is Captain Sonar. Also got a chance to play this really cool 2-player asymmetric card game called The Ravens of Three Sahasri. Let me say that again. The Ravens of Three Sahasri. So this is a Japanese game, I believe, and it's really, really weird. Basically, one player is like in a coma, and the other player is trying to access that player's dreams, and there's these ravens in the dreams that are trying to eat the girl who's in the coma's dreams, so you can't communicate with her. The theme is very weird, but it's very cool. I like it because it's cooperative, and it's 2-player, and it's asymmetrical. An asymmetrical 2-player cooperative game. There are not many of those, if any, around. And it's very, very cool. One player basically is building this kind of puzzle in the middle of the table with these cards. And then the other player is kind of like picking one of those cards and putting it in this row to try to make this certain number to keep going. And it's very, very, very difficult. It has some, I don't want to say legacy elements to it, but it's kind of cool. Once you win, if you do, I haven't won yet, but once you win, you basically open this envelope, and the envelope has a new way to play. I'm guessing it just makes the game harder. It just seems like games like this, that's what happens. They're super, super hard, and then it's like, well, if we didn't kick your ass hard enough, why don't we make it harder for you? Kind of laughing at you, like, you think you won. You have not won. Open this envelope and get your butt handed to you again. So, again, I haven't even gotten that far yet, but it's a really cool game. The Ravens of Three Sahasri. The last 2 good games that I played this year were Potion Explosion and Imhotep. Imhotep was nominated, I think, for the Spiel this year. I think it lost out to Isle of Skye. That might be wrong. I don't remember. No, because I think that was the Kenner Spiel was Isle of Skye. I really don't remember. Imhotep, though, very, very, very cool. You're basically building like the pyramids. Like, you're in ancient Egypt, and you have these boats, and you're sailing these boats to different spots on this main board that you can do different things at, score points. So one of them, like I said, is actually building a pyramid. You're actually building a pyramid with these cubes. Another place is you're building these obelisk towers, and you're like building them straight up. Another place is, you know, you're building like a tomb, and you're putting all these pieces in there, and it's fun. It's really fun. There's something missing about it that's elevating it to that great status. But I do really enjoy it, and I think it's a good game to show new gamers the hobby, because it has some really cool pieces, some really cool ideas, and that's Imhotep. I really like it. The last one is Potion Explosion. This one seems gimmicky, and perhaps it is gimmicky. It's got this cool marble... What would I say? It's like a marble... Not a tower. I don't even know what the heck to say. There's basically this like box. You drop these marbles in. They come out. They filter down in these rows, and you're basically taking the marbles out of the rows. And you take one marble on your turn. And when you take a marble, you know the marbles above that marble will flow down and hit the marbles underneath the marble you took. I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but basically you're trying to get. When you take a marble out, you're trying to get the marbles that connect to be the same color. That's called like an explosion, that it explodes. And when they explode, when they connect, you take those marbles of that color. And if when you take those colors out, the marbles that connect again, if those are also the same color, you keep taking them. And it's just this really cool, you know, kind of chain reaction that you're kind of creating. And so the reason you're taking these marbles is you're putting them on these potions that you have in front of you to try to complete the potions. Basically, the marbles are kind of basically resources, and you put them on these potions, and if you fill up all the slots on your potion with marbles of the right color, then that potion flips over, it scores points at the end of the game, and it also has a power that it does. And that's pretty cool. So the game is just that. You're taking marbles, you're putting them on these potions, turn the potions over, trying to get the most points before the end of the game. Why it's not in the great status is a couple of reasons. One, it kind of lacks a certain fun factor. It's good, and it is fun, but it lacks a certain fun factor, and I think the reason is because it's a little more thinky than I think it should be. There's a lot of analysis paralysis, especially at the end of the game, when you're just looking at this grid of marbles, and you're just like, what's the best one to take? I don't know, if I do this, then I do that. And it just really slows the game down, because you can't really think ahead in this one. So when I'm taking my turn, you know, Jeremy, two turns, you know, two people later, when it's Jeremy's turn, he can't, like, okay, I'm going to do this. Because the board, the marble grid thing, is going to change a lot before it's his turn. So you can't even really plan ahead very much. And that just kind of slows it down and just drops it down to that good status. It is a really, really cool game, though. That's Potion Explosion. All right, now we're into the You know, I played a lot of games this year that I thought were going to be amazing, like Champions of Midgard. Man, that's one game that I was just, like, clamoring for at Gen Con last year. And it was just sold out, like, instantly. People were all over this game. It's, you know, like a dice-rolling worker placement type thing. And it just looked so cool. You're battling these, like, monsters. You're sailing these high seas, trying not to fight the Kraken. It's just really, really cool thematically. It just didn't really have anything to it. It was just really blah. The monsters were all the same. It just didn't feel done to me, you know. It was kind of like that, and it just bugged me a little bit in that way. But it's not a bad game, just kind of also Karuba, I think that was another game that was up for the spiel. It was just kind of Murano, Zombicide Black Plague, Dragon and Flagon, Oceanos, and Arcane Academy, there was a few games that I thought were bad, unfortunately. Valley of the Kings, I think this is AEG. This is a deck builder that is, I love the theme. It's the Egyptian theme. And it seemed like it was going to be really cool. I don't know if I just didn't get it or if I got it and it was just, but I just thought it was bleh. Like, there was nothing really redeeming about it. It wasn't fun. I didn't know the cards. I mean, maybe that's part of it, but I didn't really care. I got my butt handed to me. I didn't really know how to do well. Sometimes that happens, you know. You play a ton of games and usually you snap into it right away and you understand I know I sounded like the Slim Jim commercial, but usually your brain like gets right into it and you can kind of hit it hard and figure out how to do well. And then there's games like Valley of the Kings where for some reason it just doesn't click and you don't get it and it's boring and it sucks and it's frustrating. And this happened to me, so that goes into the bad category. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just mean it was bad for me. I didn't really have a good time. Another one, really popular one that people love that I just did not like, was Star Wars Rebellion. You know, people love this game. Oh my God, Star Wars Rebellion. No, not bad. It was not fun in any way. I played it twice, and it just fell completely flat. I didn't enjoy any of the mechanics of it. I thought it was, again, I just didn't understand really what I was doing. I knew the rules, and I couldn't figure out the strategy. It was a rough play. Rough couple of plays, and I just sold it immediately. I just didn't care. I was like, I have so many games that I understand and that I like right away that I don't have to devote all this time to, and just because everyone else loves it does not mean you have to, so goodbye. Star Wars Rebellion. Bad, bad, bad. The last bad one I'll talk about is CV. So I played this at Grand Con 2. I was just so underwhelmed with this game. The components were just poop. The art on the cards was fantastic, but it was like, you only got to see like, it was only like, I don't know, 20% of the card was the art, which was super cool. And then it's like, man, make the art bigger. You know, it was like a Civilization light, like the most light Civilization game ever. You know, you're getting a job, I don't even know. It's just you roll dice and it sucked. It was frustrating and it sucked. So those are a ton of games that I played this year, new to me. A lot of them really awesome. A lot of them pretty good. A lot of them not so great. There were some games, before I get into my top 10, there were some games that, I really wanted to play this year, and I just haven't gotten a chance to so far. And I'll run through those real quick. I really want to play A Feast for Odin, like, so bad. I really love Uwe Rosenberg, and Caverna, and Agricola, and Lahav are like, you know, All Creatures Big and Small, Patchwork, Bonanza. I just love me some Uwe Rosenberg. So, Feast for Odin came out, and I just want to play it so bad, and I haven't been able to, because I just can't get enough people together to learn this thing. So hopefully at Nerdfest this year I can get that played. Terraforming Mars, I want to play that so bad! That's like, everyone's talking about that game. Vast the Crystal Caverns, that seems like one of the most innovative games of the year. I want to play that thing. I still haven't gotten to play Pandemic Legacy. I really want to play Twilight Struggle. I really want to play Aura and Labora. Broom Service. Inish. Agents of Smersh. Nautilus Industries. London Dread. Ulm. Ugh, Ulm. I think I want to play Ulm next. Classic Euro. Really cool grid little mechanic thing where you're pushing out pieces to get actions. It just seems so fun. Alas, those awesome games I didn't get a chance to play. Kind of seems wrong doing a top 10 not playing these games that people widely consider the best games of the year, but that's not me. Here is me. It is the Gamecaster's top 10 games of the year. All right, here we go. My top 10, starting with number 10. Okay, say top 10 of the year. It's really top 10 new to me of the year. So all these games, you know, that I've talked about, you're probably like, what the heck? CV didn't come out this year. You know, Midgard didn't come out this year. Go certainly didn't come out this year. It's just new to me games this year. You know, I haven't played these games. These are the games I played. New games I played this year. Number 10. Number 10 for me is Monikers. I first heard about this game earlier in the year. Kind of brushed it aside. It's a party game. You know, kind of a la Cards Against Humanity. And I am just so done with that game. I'm so over that. So I heard about Monikers, and I was like, another like social party game with a bunch of cards like this that are, you know, kind of, I don't know. It doesn't sound fun. I played it. Holy shit, was I wrong. This game is outstanding. It's a game, you show non-gamers this game at like a party setting, and they fall in love because it's just so much fun. Basically, you have a bunch of cards. You have two teams. Again, team games are great. And you have a bunch of cards. And the cards have names on them, you know, like different things, like memes or, you know, One might say the Archduke Franz Ferdinand. You know, another one might say Star Wars kid. You know, it just spans just everything, just a bunch of crap. So basically what you're doing is you run through the deck. The first time you run through the deck, you can say whatever the hell you want to get them to guess the answer. Anything, you know. This guy was on YouTube, and he made a fool of himself, you know, from a famous franchise, and he made sounds like pew, 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 and someone's like, Star Wars kid, boom, okay, correct, put that down. Then you go to the next card. This guy, you know, is widely considered, he started World War I, and nobody can get it. Nobody can get it. It's a band that said Take Me Out, or I think that was a song. Franz Ferdinand, okay, but say they don't get Franz Ferdinand. You put it to the side. You keep going, you have a minute, get through as many cards as you can, say whatever you want. Whatever cards you got, go in a pile to the side. You'll score those the other round. Whatever cards you didn't get shuffled back into the deck. Then the other team gets to go. You do that until the deck runs out. Then you score points, and that's your first round. Then the second time, you go through the same deck. But this time, instead of saying whatever you want to get people to your team to guess the cards, you can only say one word. So, you know, for Star Wars kid, you might just pick it up and just be like, internet. And then someone will be like, oh, Star Wars kid, you know, maybe. And so you do that again, and then you score again. And then the third time you go, again, same deck of cards. So you've seen all these cards a bunch, you know, two different times. Then this last time, all you can do is act it out. And it's just charades, you know. So Star Wars kid is pretty, you know, you might, and you can make noises like pew, pew, pew. And, you know, you're holding a lightsaber. It's a ton of silly and awesome fun. It's, I mean, everyone's laughing the whole time in rounds two and three. It's just pure hilarity. You create inside jokes during the game, and it's just, I love it. Again, you can get this at Target. It's just a fantastic little game. It's called Monikers. It has two expansions. I have them both. You will need these expansions if you plan on playing this game a lot. It falls victim to the Cards Against Humanity thing, where if you play with the same group, you're all gonna know the same cards. It's not fun anymore. If you play with a bunch of different people, doesn't matter. If you play with the same group, you're gonna want the expansions. One's called Schmonikers, and the other one's called Something Something. I think you can get them on Amazon. I don't know if they're available at Target, but that's Monikers. That is my number 10. All right, number 9. Again, this game didn't come out this year, but I just got to play it for the first time this year, and it is a hidden role game, and I love hidden role type games. Hidden role kind of deduction game. This one's Deception Murder in Hong Kong. I am so blown away. I did not think I was going to like this game that much. I mean, I knew I was going to like it. It had been on my radar for a while. I never pulled the trigger because, I don't know, I mean, it looked cool, but it didn't seem to get so much buzz that I just had to have it. My friend Jeff got it, played it with his students at school. He runs like a game club group at his school, and he played it with them, and he was like, dude, this went over amazing. They loved it. And I did too. It was really great. And so then I got it. Played it with a bunch of people at work game night, and holy cow, it is so fantastic. It's not without its flaws. It's got some, I wouldn't say problems, but it has some things that I'm not the fondest about, but wow. The beginning and middle game, I think, are incredible. I really, really love it. That's Deception Murder in Hong Kong. All right, number 8. This is a two-player game based on a really popular game by Antoine Bauza. This one is called Seven Wonders Duel. Holy cow. This one's really, really fun. So it distills Seven Wonders, you know, into kind of its, like, because you still kind of, I don't know. So Seven Wonders is a card drafting game, right? And it's just full of iconography. It's fun, but it's, you know, there's a lot to it. There's a lot going on for new gamers, even though it's kind of sometimes considered a light entry-level game. I don't know that I would really agree with that, just because of all the iconography and the concepts are kind of different, but it's really, really cool. There's just tons of, it's sprawling, there's tons of cards everywhere. Seven Wonders Duel takes, you know, Seven Wonders and just, boom, it's down to like a 30-minute game. It's really, really great. You know, it has the feel of Seven Wonders, but it's definitely different. Check it out, Seven Wonders Duel. Number 7, another two-player game. It came out this year. I don't know. The theme is cool. It's about a dog show, basically. Running a dog show. And the game is called Agility. It is fantastic. I heard about it. I don't know. I heard about it like in passing on maybe a podcast. Maybe the Dice Tower podcast. Maybe Blue Peg, Pink Peg. I can't remember. But I got it, and I am just, like, kind of head over heels for this game. It's very, very, very good. I mean, I can't really think of a negative to it, you know. It's one of those, it's just really, really sound. And I was surprised at that. It's tight gameplay. It's, you know, very tense. The same with, you know, with this really light agility theme where you're just basically taking, you're trying to be the first one to get three dogs to finish, you know, their agility route. You know, they're running through tubes or running up the A-frames and, you know, standing on the, you know, the stands and just looking pretty. And they got these really cute little, you know, dog meeples and bone meeples for the resources. It's really, really cool. I really enjoy that game. Agility. Number six, this one, it's super light, but it's got a mechanic that I haven't really seen until this game, but now I think it's kind of everywhere. It's the I split, you choose mechanic, and it's called Animals on Board. This one, I really like this game. It's very light, and it's very fun. Basically, you got a bunch of animals, you're on an ark. It's not Noah's Ark. It's like, the theme is weird. So it's different arcs, you know? Noah is trying to get two animals. You're trying to get three or more. You can get one, and that's fine. You'll score points for one. But you're trying to get three or more. That's where the big points are. You don't want two. Only Noah wants two, I guess. You don't want two animals. But anyway, the coolest part about the game is the main mechanic. It's called I Split, You Choose. So basically, there's a group of animals in one chunk. On your turn, you can either split the group or choose and buy a group. That's it. It's really cool. So a group is just one tile, or it can be 10 tiles, whatever. You have to split the group, you know, one group into two. So at the beginning of the game, there's, we'll say, 10 tiles out there. I'll split, you know, six over here and four over here. Then the next player has a choice to make. Okay, do I want to buy one of those two, or do I want to split the group, one of the groups again? And you're trying to split the group so that the next player doesn't get, you know, a sweet, you know, collection of animals, but you're also trying to split it in a way so when it comes back to you, you can get, you know, the animals you need. And it's just, it's really, really fun. The artwork on the tiles is adorable, you know. There's five of each type of animal in the game, and, you know, they go from, like, baby animal of that type to, like, adult. So there's, like, five gorilla tiles, and, you know, there's a little tiny little baby monkey on the first tile, and the fifth tile is, like, a, you know, giant full-grown gorilla. It's just really, really cool. That's Animals on Board. Number five is a cooperative game that came out a long time ago, but it just got a second edition. And this second edition just turned this game on its head. And that's Mansions of Madness, second edition. Now, this is a Cthulhu mythos-themed, you know, H.P. Lovecraft-type game. And I don't really care about that. Some people really love the Cthulhu theme. I don't really give a crap about that theme. But this second edition is insane. The first one was really cool. It was a one versus all. The problem with it was the one player had to set the entire game up because it's kind of like a story. If they set something up wrong, it ruins the entire game. And that is a big bummer. So with the second edition, that one player is gone and replaced by an app. So if you have an iPad or if you have a computer with Steam, you can download this app. And the app does all the setup of the one player. So it's really fully cooperative now. It is so great. Oh my gosh, I put a TV in my game room. I downloaded the app on Steam. Turn off all the lights, you know, and we play Mansions of Madness. And the app walks you through the game. And it's got this ambient music and it's, you know, it basically has all these sound effects, and it just really, really, really immerses you in the game. And it's just so much fun. It takes everything good about the first edition, the puzzles and all that cool stuff, and really makes it better in this second edition. The only thing I could possibly see as a negative, I guess, would be that maybe sometimes you're a little bit too withdrawn from the board and concentrating on the app. You know, maybe that's one slight possible negative, but I don't even care because at the end of the day, as an experience, it's amazing. Go out and get this game, Mansions of Madness, second edition. Number four is a little game that I found by listening to the Blue Peg Pink Peg podcast. Christina was talking about it. And is that her name, Christina? That might not be her name. Anyway, they were talking about this little game that she took on a car ride with one of her friends. They were going to one of her roller derby competitions, and on the way, she was like, oh, I'll bring this game called Dark Stories. And I'd never heard of this before until she talked about it. And it's basically, all it is there's a story on the card, and it's just like a one-sentence story. And on the back of the card, it tells you what happened, like what the story is all about. But everybody has to guess. By asking yes or no questions, they have to guess what happened. So the card might say, you know, a man walked down the street, looked up, and then died. That's all it'll say. And then you say, what do you think happened? And so it's on the other players. All they do is they're like, okay, did something fall from the sky? You know, and then you're like, yes. Like, okay. Was the thing that fell from the sky alive? No. Did somebody drop the thing from the sky on this person? Yes. Were they trying to kill this person? No. You know, and so you ask questions like that, and you're trying, and then you eventually arrive at the answer. And it's just such a great car game. It's even a great game. What I do with this game is I play this throughout a game night. I'll read a card, and then I'll get these people thinking about it. You know, so while they're playing a game, like maybe Potion Explosion, they can be thinking about this answer, you know, when it's not their turn, because they can't really do anything else. So it's a really cool game like that. Each, and there's a bunch of different, you know, decks of these. There's Dark Stories, Dark Stories 2, Dark Stories Crime Edition, Dark Stories Movie Edition, and they each have 50 cards in them. And so the bummer is, once you, you know, run through them all, you know them all. But playing with different groups, it's a great time. It's a blast. Check it out. Highly, highly recommended from me and the people over at Blue Peg Pink Peg. It's called Dark Stories. Number three is, I don't even know why I bought this. There's a lot of games like that out there where I see it one time, I'm like, that looks cool, boom, buy it. That happened to me today with another Oink game. I heard Eric Sommer talk about it for 2 seconds, or Tom Vassell or somebody. I was listening to the Dice Tower podcast. They just mentioned the name. They're like, this game's great, love it. And I was like, okay, boom, bought it. Anyway, that happened with this number three, and I'm so glad I did. It's a Days of Wonder, the new Days of Wonder title, and it's Quadropolis. And this game really knocked me down with how great it was. I just could not. I didn't think it was going to be really this cool. It's a city building game, you know, like a suburbia type thing. The cool thing is, though, it's a grid, right? And it's got, you have all these tiles that are on this grid. I think it's a, I don't know if it's a 5x5 grid. I really don't know. But it's freaking outstanding. You're basically collecting these tiles and placing them in unique ways on your own player board. And then they score at the end of the game, kind of like Between Two Cities. If you've played that, you know, there's different ways the tiles synergize together. If you have red next to blue, then the red scores this way. If you have yellow tiles stacked up high or next to the greens, and they score. You know, if you have a certain amount of workers on these and they score, it's really, 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 really fun. It's kind of the perfect weight for a game for me. Maybe a little lighter than it should be, or than, you know, a game that I super love, but it's, I don't know, it's really, really good. And that's Quadropolis by Days of Wonder, number three. Number two. I heard about this game. I definitely heard about this number two game from the Secret Cabal podcast. Podcasting, people, is an amazing place to hear about new games. Hopefully some people that are listening to this are learning about some new games that they might want to pick up, because... All right. Anyway, number two for me. I don't know how it's not more popular. I really thought it was going to blow up. And I think maybe it kind of has, but not like I thought it was. And that's a dexterity game called Junk Art. Now, this is designed by Jay and Sen, the guys that did Belfort, which is like my favorite Euro game. But wow, could these two games not be any more different. I mean, Junk Art is... Ugh. I saw Sen Foon Lim. He's you know, one of the designers. I saw him at Grand Con, and I was talking to him, and I'm like, how did you do this? Because basically, all right, so basically what the game is just a bunch of random crap, you know, like pieces, just a bunch of different stuff. And what you're doing is you're basically, in most of these scenarios, you're trying to build this crap and make it, you're trying to build it up, you know, kind of like reverse Jenga. You're trying, almost like a Rhino Hero, you're trying to build it so it doesn't fall over. But the pieces, they don't always fit together the way you want them to, you know, or like animal upon animal is kind of more what it's like. The pieces don't really always fit together. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You're trying to build it as high as you can before it all falls down and make everyone laugh. It's really, 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 really awesome. So I asked Sen, you know, at Grand Con this year, how did you come up with this game? And he was just like, you know, I went to Michael's and I bought this pack of, you know, it was like a contractor's, like a art person's pack, and it was just a bunch of crap. And I just like put them together. And that was the way it all came together for me, and it was just, I refined it from there. I mean, how simple, you know? Again, the games that are just the most awesome, a lot of times, oftentimes, are these very, very, very simple ideas that you're like, how the hell did I not think of this? What the crap? So, Junk Art is fantastic. I really, really, really love it. I really, really recommend it. It's the second game in the pretzel game line. The first game was Flick 'em Up, which I also had and enjoyed. Junk Art is miles better, in my opinion. It will stay in my collection, hopefully permanently, unless it's bested by the next pretzel game next year. No, I love it. Everyone I've showed it to seems to have a blast. It's just a fantastic game. That's Junk Art. And here we go. Number one. The craziest thing about number one is this game just came out like 21 days ago. So there's a friendly local game store right in my area that I go to all the time. I usually just pop in, see what they got, talk to the owner for a few minutes, you know, and then pop out. It's just something to do, somewhere to go, something to do. So he's always trying to get me, the owner, to come by, like on Saturday or Sunday, and play games. He's like, hey, you should just come by. We have board games, you know, we play on Saturdays and Sundays. Come by and play and let me know, you know, when you're coming, and it'll be a fun time. So he's like, you know, I went in there one day in the end of November, and he's like, come, why don't you come in on this Sunday and play some games? And, you know, I finally, for some reason, I was just like, you know what, I'm going to do it. I gathered a bunch of games up that Sunday, went over there, and there was, like, hundreds of people there. And I was like, wow, these board game days are crazy. But no, they weren't there to play this. It wasn't there for just this board game day. It turned out there was this new collectible card game with dice, and it was a pre-release, you know, like kind of play event. And this game, it was called Star Wars Destiny, and I had never heard of it. I mean, me, I'm like Mr. Game. That's all I do. I'm on Board Game Geek constantly. I'm just researching, and I had never heard of this. So anyway, I brushed it off and I was like, okay, that's why these people are here. So I played, you know, all the games I brought. I had a great time. I'm about to leave, and the owner, Rob, is like, hey, why don't you demo Star Wars Destiny and see what it's about? And I didn't really care. You know, I never really got into collectible games. I was never into Magic, never got into Pokemon, you know, I was never into Netrunner, and I never got into that stuff. Any of that collectible stuff. So reluctantly I said, ah, okay. I was just, you know, I'll be nice, I'll do it. The guy taught me, and, you know, 20 minutes later, I'm walking out, and I bought 2 starter packs and 6 boosters, and I am hooked. That's all I'm doing. I mean, from that day, that was like a month ago almost, till now, I don't even know that I really played another board game. That's all I'm doing. I'm building decks, I'm buying booster boxes, I'm, you know, trying to pull the Darth Vaders, and I'm building these, you know, trying to get these characters to synergize in different ways. I am like head over freaking heels in love with this game. I cannot stop. I'm obsessed. Somebody help me. Seriously, this is a plea and a cry for help. I just can't. I love it. I love it so much. It's great. I mean, I'm obsessed. I have 2 booster boxes coming in. I think it drops tomorrow. I'm like tweaking already with anticipation. I just can't. You know, I want this. I just don't want this to end. It kind of harkens back to my, you know, I never got into a collectible card game, but it harkens back into, like, you know, my youth where I would, you know, I collected hockey cards, and I would just love to go to the comic store and pull these packs, you know, buy a bunch of packs of hockey cards and baseball cards and try to get that, you know, oh, I got that Patrick Waugh special card. Oh, my God. You know, and it was just like a great feeling when you open these packs and get stuff. And that happened again when I bought these boosters and I've been opening these things. And that's how they get you, right? That's the marketing genius that Fantasy Flight is doing, or all these collectible card game models. And I know a lot of people hate that. And I would hate that too. But I never got into Magic. I never got into Pokemon. I never got into any of those CCGs. I never got into any of those. So this is my foray into it. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine spending more money on it than I should. Because I never really got... I haven't had anything like this in the game, my gaming career, you know, since I pulled those hockey cards back in the early days of my youth. And it's just so freaking fun. And my buddy Jeremy, who's not with us today, is kind of just as into it as I am, and we are just like having a ball with this game. Unfortunately, it's, I don't know what Fantasy Flight is doing, but they cannot keep this thing in stock. It drops tomorrow again, like the next wave, but it's already sold out. You know what I mean? I pre-ordered stuff. You can't buy it anywhere. It's going to sell out in seconds. You can try to go to your game store, your friendly local game store, and get some if you want. And they might have the starters. The starters are Kylo Ren and Rey. They might have those. I don't know. They might not. Wait a couple months, I would say, if you really want to get into it, when it's more available. And holy cow, it's awesome. So, that is it. That is 2016 in review. We talked about some great. We talked about some good. We talked about some eh. We talked about some bad. We talked about some ones I wanted to play. And then we gave our top 10. All right. Hopefully, this is not the end for another 6, 8, 12, 14, 16 months. If we can't get Jeremy over, I'm just going to plan on doing this solo for a while until he can get back in the fold. We're going to have different topics. It's not just going to be, you know, this game is about this. This game is about this. I like this game. It's not going to be that. We're going to do some more. I'm going to do some more topics and have some awesome discussions, hopefully with myself. That's not crazy, is it? And that's it. So, for the ghost of Jeremy Pete, I am Ryan James, and you have been listening to The Gamecasters.